You're tuning in to Real Talk with Paige and Casey.
When life gives you lemons, say, pass the tequila, sis.
Welcome to the podcast, Dinny. We're so excited for you to come on. Thank you so much. So for everyone, Dinny is a female liberation coach and master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming. You also specialize in timeline therapy and hypnotherapy. Is that right?
That's right.
Can you sort of, I guess, give us a bit of an introduction to what it is you do, who you are, and what people can expect if they come to a female liberation coach for anyone that is completely new to this sort of work?
For me, the element of difference that I have is, yes, I've got, you know, I'm a master practitioner in neurolinguistics programming, hypnotherapy, timeline therapy, but I also bring in the energetics and creative arts into the mix to just help release the blocks from a more embodied space and get my clients in a mindset where they just completely let go. They let go of everything and anything that's going on within their lives when we're in a session, and they're able to drop into their body in a much deeper way, because we're dealing with the subconscious of why people make decisions that they do. So we're tapping into their conditioning, what's happened in their childhood, the blocks that they have. And if you've ever seen the picture of an iceberg, you know, you've got just the top that you can see, which is 5% that we derive our decisions from. But there's also 95% that you're not necessarily aware of. And that's where, you know, you're either a risk taker or not, you're overly ambitious or you're not ambitious. You know, we make a lot of our foundational decisions from our subconscious. So we're tapping into this space. And as a liberation coach, it's really about coming into the essence of who you truly are. So what are your values? What are your key messaging? What are your codes? What's your magic? And removing the noise from anybody and everything else and just honing in on your pure essence, which is really powerful and I love it so much.
How might that feed into women in business and leadership?
It goes hand in hand, and that's because a woman in a leadership position really needs to understand herself. What are the decisions that she's going to make? How is she going to be able to support a team to help them elevate and grow? And so it's a foundational essence of knowing who you are, what's true to you, and then how can you bring this aspect of giving your team permission to be themselves and driving in emotional intelligence throughout this as well. Then it also taps into self-worth, having the confidence, being able to be in those uncomfortable situations where you have to ask for pay rise or, you know, put yourself in the situation for that job promotion, and being able to sit in the discomfort or the nervousness or scary aspects of that and move through those emotions to then have the confidence to ask. You're never going to know whether you're going to get that thing if you're not doing it or asking for what you desire.
Is that a limitation that you see quite frequently among your clients?
There's a few things. It's getting stuck in the fear of being too much, wanting too much. And it's such a common fear with women. We don't want to be too much in relationships at work. We don't want to overshine, you know, another woman, where it's knowing that those aspects of us are okay. And we all get to shine our lights super bright together and support one another. And I think this goes in, whether it's within your career or outside of that, it's really trusting who you are. And it just comes back to the foundation, because your self-worth travels throughout each aspect. And so your confidence is so important, and just building that up helps women to be themselves more, I think.
And on that confidence, how would one build their confidence, and what would the steps and procedures look like for that person?
I mean, it sometimes can be a little bit challenging, especially if, which I have been, highly ambitious, incredibly independent, thinking that I needed to do it all on my own, being in that quite heavily sort of masculine state. And so that shuts a lot of yourself down. So I was shut down in various different aspects of myself because I just thought I needed to go and just be this and do this. Whereas when it's stepping into your confidence, it's really about, you know, allowing yourself to be vulnerable. And that's one of the key aspects, being who you are, despite what's going on around you. If other people are saying one thing, do you believe in that? Okay, great. If your thoughts or your values are different, are you going to be speaking up about that? And believing in yourself, believing, trusting, feeling safe in your body, and knowing that you can be true to who you are in any situation. And you can move through life in that space knowing that you'll attract the right tribe to you rather than trying to fit in. And so I encourage women to really step into a lot of embodiment work. And so that's where it's like, you know, putting on your favorite song and dancing and like letting yourself free and just express yourself. And this is where art is so beautiful, because it's coming from an abstract aspect where it's, you're not following any structure. You're just allowing the paint to flow and you're allowing your creativity to flow regardless of what it looks like. It's just getting your hands on canvas or even with a paintbrush and just learning to express yourself in any which way, in any form. And then that helps to build your confidence in doing other things. And again, it's also like being in those, having those uncomfortable conversations that you're not necessarily used to, moving through that. And that's what builds your confidence more so.
Back to that painting. So yeah. Are you like finding that a lot of people are coming through with a lot more anxiety, a lot more depression, and a lot more like not that confidence within in themselves? And then you find like if they do painting or they're singing or something like that, that helps?
Yeah, that it definitely does, because again, it's detaching from the narratives and the stories that we've all grown up with. The I'm not good enough, I can't do it. And then in the patriarchal structure, it's the challenge of, as a woman coming into the workspace, can I actually ask for what I want and get that? And so when you learn these different avenues of what it does, is you're letting go of the attachment and you're just learning more to be embodied in who you are. And so, and this can be with regards to anything of, you know, the attachment to the outcome. And we can hold on so tightly, and our bodies, with regards to our nervous system as well, we can carry that tension throughout. And so, you know, there's other elements of ice baths, which can be absolutely fantastic. And what I found for me, who used to be a total control freak, is that you're in the ice bath, but you need to let go of the tension. And then you calm your nervous system and you're breathing. So, I mean, you know, doing regular ice baths are absolutely brilliant. For women, it's a bit different because we don't want to do it closer to our cycle. We want to give our bodies that time to rest. So outside of that, it's stepping into the arts, singing. It's, you know, doing the things that you've always wanted to do. Again, that builds your confidence and it opens you up.
Just in terms of, yeah, like having those really uncomfortable conversations, like you said, I know myself, I struggle with having the difficult conversations and I have to talk myself into it. And I know the more I have them, the more, I guess they don't ever feel comfortable, but you sort of, you train your nervous system to be able to hold that space. How do you help women to have those really, really tricky conversations, whether it be in relationships with partners when they're perhaps dating, or when, like you said, they are asking for a pay rise, or really like working in a masculine workplace where they feel that they can't fully express themselves?
Yeah, it really comes down to trusting yourself and having the confidence in yourself. And I know we've spoken about this a few times already, but it's the foundation. And so with the women that I work with, it's coming through and having a look at their conditioning. What is their narrative? What is the trauma that they've experienced? And these spaces are where, you know, will hold a person back from really taking that step forward. And it's working through their trauma. So then they have that element of understanding of why they've made the past decisions that they have, and start creating those building blocks. So then they are having more confident aspects. And, you know, I know for me personally, having those uncomfortable conversations in a relationship especially has been super scary, because we get scared of rejection. We don't know what their reaction's going to be like. And there's this thing about a woman's responsiveness, female responsiveness. And so it's that ability to have those conversations. And an example was, you know, I reconnected with a guy I was dating, and we ended up hooking up, and, you know, he's a beautiful man, and we're still friends. And then it was like the next morning, and I wanted to spend a little bit more time with him, but he had his plan and he was talking about all the things that he wanted to do. And so the question that I wanted to ask him was about spending more time with him, but also, hey, you know, do you want to give me a lift home rather than organizing an Uber? And I know he would have said yes if I asked him that question, but it was like, oh, he's going to say no, and he's going to just like the rejection, and oh my God, how do I deal with that? And that's the space that we need to learn to sit into more, because that's where we're going to expand ourselves and be able to hold more, and then have more of those kind of conversations. And it doesn't need to be the exact conversation, but it's different aspects within a relationship or within your career, that when you are in that space where your body does feel a little bit contracted, allowing yourself to breathe and sit in that for a moment helps to create the expansion. And also not sort of retracting the question of, if I did ask him to give me a lift home, and then go, oh, no, if you want to, but if you don't want to, that's like, that's okay too. It's like, no. Yeah. You learn to ask for what you desire. Bring all of yourself to the table as a fully expressed woman. And knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, if he does say no, or if there is that element of rejection, you're not going to die.
Exactly. And as you said, like, when you're coming in strong, you're like, can you do this for me, instead of going, can you do this? But however, it's okay if you don't, because you're already backtracking what you've just said.
Yeah.
And you're already talking yourself out of it and them out of it.
Yeah.
Back on that rejection part, like, I don't struggle with this personally, but I do know some of my team do struggle with it. And it definitely comes down to them realizing, like, it is okay for someone to say no for whatever it is, because you're giving them that decision for them to make that option. You're not making that decision for them.
Yeah.
And then if they do say no, as you said, like, it's fine. Like, you're not going to die. It is what it is. It's just like, maybe next time when you ask, they might say yes.
The other thing is with it is that, okay, if they say no, what's the story that you're creating in your mind? And this is another piece that comes through from our conditioning as kids, and like through our adulthood and our trauma that we've experienced as well. What's the narrative that you're creating? So it was very easy for me to say, oh, he's going to say no. And he says no because he doesn't really like me. Or, you know what, maybe it could be the case, but that's not my responsibility to hold on to whatever that reason may be for them.
I know personally I struggle with that, but I do know a lot of people as well who do the same thing. It's like, you make this narrative and you make this, you know, this other person's behavior about you and something that you've done, or something that's wrong with you. And that's when you start to get really down on yourself, and then you almost don't want to, you know, push through that discomfort with another person purely because of the narratives that you tell yourself.
And that's the space when people run through those stories, they hold themselves back from really living their dream life or going after what they want, or, you know, being that fully expressed woman in the space and appreciating all of who they are and having the confidence to say, you know, this is me.
And then moving into asking for a pay rise.
Yeah.
So if you're wanting to ask for a pay rise and you are an introvert and you don't like rejection and you are scared to ask for one, what would the steps and processes that you would that you could work on to build up your confidence to ask for one? Mm. And if they do say no, like if the boss does say no for whatever reason, what do you do with that information? How do you process that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It can, I mean, I know I've done it myself and it can be really scary and daunting. So the first thing would be prepared. So why are you asking for the pay rise? And remember, they're business owners. It's about their bottom line. So you've got to have an element where it's about them. So what have you done for the company over the period that you've been there? What have you done for them? How have you helped them increase their sales or gain new clients or whatever that may be? And what has the outcome been for the company? So then basically what you're doing is that it's like you're putting a bit of a report together of the things that you've brought to the company, how they've grown because of your contribution. And then I would suggest going through that and having the conversation with yourself as if your boss is sitting with you. And when you do that, you can go to the various conversations that you would have of being rejected and, okay, how does your body respond to that? Or even we can go through the manifestation aspect of it and having the ideal outcome that you want where they do say yes, you know, and running those scenarios within your mind and really bringing them to life. And what that's going to do is you're prepared for the various different outcomes that comes out from that conversation. And sometimes that no is going to be there and they're going to have their reasons and justifications of why you can't get the pay rise. And when that happens, it's a matter of also asking the question, okay, you know, can we set in a training program or put in a time frame of how I can excel in my skills in these areas? So in 6 months' time, we can reopen this conversation again around the salary and see where the company's at and where I'm at. And at the end of the day as well, it's also a decision of if they say no and they're really adamant with that no, with even you brought the fact that, you know, what you've done for the company and you've made it about them, you also need to make a decision whether you feel a value within that company. Mm. And if you can see that they've undermined other people before, are you willing to run that course? Are you going to be okay in 6 months' time if they say no to you again? And so it's, again, staying true to who you are and going, okay, I've done so much for this company. I'm not actually feeling valued. From what I've seen in the past, they may not actually give me that pay rise. So am I going to start to look for another job and that possibility?
I 100% agree with everything that you just said. I find that being a boss myself, I find that a lot of, and I also hear about it a lot in industries, that a lot of like young people who are coming through now, not everybody, but a lot, some of them are very, very entitled and they're very like, this is what I'm worth, but you need a lot more training. Like, you're just coming into the, whatever it may be, you're just coming into the industry or you're just coming as a worker or you're just out of school and it's like, you need to work your way up.
Can I challenge that a little bit? Is that a positive thing that someone is from the get-go, even though they may not have the training, that they're showing up being like, this is what I think I'm worth, this is my value, and this is how I'm going to show up to you with it? Do you think that could potentially have a lot of positivity to it?
For me, I think yes, but I also think that you would need to come to me and say, this is what I'm worth for the business. This is what I do. This is my retention. I'm a hairdresser. This is my rebooking rate. This is what I can do for you. And if any of those, if all those numbers are like in like the plus, 100%. But if all those numbers are in the minus, then that's where the line draws. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Dini, I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
I think it's great that they are that ambitious. I know I've had this happen with me several times with regards to trying to like hire new staff. And they do come in and they think that, you know, they can charge a higher rate. The challenge with this is that there's also other people who've got 10 years of experience who are not charging that much. So what are your skill set? How many years of experience? Because it just is like similar to what you were saying. What's your experience? And I mean, great, it's so good that you think you're worth $100,000 and you're just starting out in your career. But also keep in mind that there's so many other people who actually have the experience and are earning that $100,000. So I think it's a balance. Being that ambitious is brilliant. And, you know, they can be a sponge, but coming into it. But I think there's an element of arrogance in that as well.
Yeah, 100%. And it's that thing, it's like, yes, they're so ambitious. And as a boss, like, I'll never dim your light or pop your bubble. But it's like, if you are that motivated and that ambitious, cool, let's work on X, Y, Z to get you to where we need you to be to make that 100K. And give them a time frame instead of going, no, that's not happening. It's like, give them a time frame of 6 months, a year. And it's like, if you can do X, Y, Z, and we'll put you through all these training courses and I will help you get there, is that something that you're open to?
Yeah, I think that's brilliant to create that plan for them. So then that way they're also saying, oh, okay, there's a plan set for me here. I can work towards these goals.
100%. They're feeling valued. They're feeling heard. And they're feeling like they can grow within the business.
I think patience needs to be a part of it too. Like, they do need to be patient with their career and, you know, have that understanding that, okay, there's so much that you don't know.
I think though, when you are such a high achiever and highly ambitious, you know, you do want things to happen quick. You don't realize that it does take time and it is a lot of patience. And, you know, you've got to walk before you run.
I think they can work quicker towards their career and, you know, towards a leadership position if they're willing to do the work. So if they're doing the things that the other team members are not doing, then yeah, okay, like, you can see that they're building their skills, they're working, like, they're taking things quite seriously in terms of their career, so they can fast track it. But you can't fast track it if you just say, yeah, I'm coming in, I'm new to this, and give me the $100,000, but no, I'm not willing to do the work for it and to up level my skills and all of those sorts of things.
I agree with that. People need to do the work. It's not going to be handed to you on a silver platter. And you need to get out there and get it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to come to you.
Yeah.
So while we're on the topic of business, you recently attended the Forbes Women Empower Summit. Is that right?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. What were your key takeaways from that?
I mean, there were so many women that were on throughout the summit. And it was just really interesting to see how they just didn't give a shit about what anybody else thought. They were just staying in their lane. They were clear on who they are, what they wanted to create, and they did it. And they didn't listen to the noise. And, you know, when you're creating something that's quite different, there's always going to be noise. And so they developed the skills to just stay true to themselves and just block it all out. And, you know, I think Emma Greed, she's co-founder of Skims and Good America. She was just talking about the fact that you can't listen to the noise, you can't listen to the naysayers, and even the comments and things like that she would get, it was like, okay, that's their thing, that's what they're projecting. It had nothing to do with her. So it was really interesting, and they all had multi-million dollar businesses and, you know, multiple businesses that they were part of and investors and all of those sorts of things.
I love her. I follow her on Instagram. Hey.
Yeah.
She's, like, she is my idol.
It's just the no bullshit. It's like, no bullshit. I am who I am. This is me. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it about her. And she takes risks too.
Yeah, she does.
She makes mistakes and she learns from them.
And she's very much, you know, I'm a working mom. I'm not a bad mother because I'm so ambitious in my career. I still take my kids to school and I do what works for our family. And I think that's another aspect with the spiritual world. There's this shift that you've got to be, you know, You can't be so ambitious, and competition's really bad, and wanting to win is really bad, and power, oh no. And each and every one of these women were ambitious. They were women of power. They knew exactly what they wanted. They weren't afraid to ask for it. And they knew that competition was part of what they did, and that they wanted to win, but it wasn't about winning for money. It was winning for their clients, for their customers. And so they were all so aware of their customer journey and what was happening and the impact that they were creating. And so it's like, it's funny because I think, you know, the spiritual world has labeled these things as, you know, I called it the dirty word, with having power, competition, winning, and being ambitious. But they're not. It's part of business. It's part of creating your empire. And there's different ways of doing it. We don't, as women, we don't need to act like a man to get ahead in that aspect. We can embody our feminine energy. We can embody our feminine power and move through that aspect of it, rather than just being so insanely structured and pushing through and not resting when we need to rest. Because we're different. Women and men are so different in how we operate.
I know when you say the words like power, ambition, competition, I straight away think of, okay, so that means I have to show up to business and leadership in a masculine way, where I'm hustling, I'm not feeling my feelings, I'm kind of shut down. I'm, you know, can you talk to how you show up in, like, you know, embodying empowerment, ambition, showing up to competition in a feminine way?
Yeah, I used to be that woman that was very much, as I mentioned earlier, in my masculine. So it was blocking out how I felt. I wasn't resting. I was on the go all the time in the corporate world. I've been in the corporate world for about like 20, 23 years. And so a lot of that was blocking out the emotions, acting like a man, just pushing through and not listening to what my body needed. And then now, having gone through the journey of what I've gone through and unlearning the ways of the patriarchy, unlearning the very masculine structure that we currently live in, I had to drop into my body and reconnect. And so I was reconnecting with my intuition, with what my body needed, taking the rest when I needed to. And so now it's very different in how I operate, even still in the corporate world. So with my previous job, I gave myself the mornings. And so I would go for a walk on the beach. I would go for ocean dips. I would ease into the day. But my priority in the mornings was giving back to me first. So even if it was meditation or going to the gym, it was for me. And then through that, I was able to give so much more to my job at the time, because I was just inspired. I was relaxed. I was recharged. And so even if I had to work the long hours for a couple of projects, it was okay, because that wasn't how I was doing it every single day, which was the way I used to do it. So the priority was me giving time to myself and then taking breaks when I needed to take breaks, and listening to my body and tuning in with my cycle. So, you know, a week before I was getting my period, I could feel my body needing to slow down. So I would reshift my schedule at work with regards to meetings and doing the slower things that I could take time with. And sometimes you can't always work it out that way when you're in the corporate world, but as much as you can reprioritize. And that made such a difference. My energy was through the roof. I was connected to my sexual power again. And, you know, pleasure and incorporating that in all aspects of my life. It was just such a different way of being. And I think it's really important that women learn that. And part of that is slowing down.
Yeah, I agree. Because I definitely encourage my team to do that. Like in the mornings, wake up early, go for a swim, like have a coffee in bed and just like wake up and then just think about what you've got to do for the day and just ease on into it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, go to the gym and get those endorphins and then start your day. But whatever it is, just kind of have a me time.
Yeah.
Like same thing afternoon too. It's like go for a swim on the beach or go for a walk or listen to a podcast or something and just just take your mind off what just happened at work, and then you kind of like shift it.
Yeah, it helps you. I think it helps you be more present through life. Mm. I know for me personally, because I was giving so much to work and not giving time to myself, I was so resentful. I was coming from a really angry place. Whereas when I started to give to myself, I was like, yeah, okay, let's do this. Okay, you need me to work like longer hours today? Cool, I've got time. Like, it was just such a different way of being.
Yeah.
And then that way you don't experience burnout.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You know, like, because you're just filling your cup. And it's like, you can't, if your cup's not full, how are you meant to fill someone else's cup?
Yeah, exactly.
You literally can't. And that's what I tell my team that, like, when, like, I can pick it. Like, when they're going through something outside of work or whatever it might be, it's like, have you filled your cup? And they're like, no. I'm like, cool, well, you need to go do that before you can help with whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, because, Case, you are quite, you're very switched on, you're a great leader, and you obviously have those embodied female qualities in leadership. But I know I have some friends that work in industries where it's predominantly males. They don't give that sort of advice to their employees. It's like they kind of just continue to put more work. And then, you know, the people that are having to do the work are feeling like they're not good at their job because their time, you know, they'll put it down to time management or whatever it is, when it's actually their boss who is continuing to give them more than what their capacity is and not having those conversations.
Yeah, I also find it takes two to tango, so they need to take responsibility as well and speak up.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like communication on every single level is key.
And you really do need to speak up about what's working for you and what's not working for you. And let your manager know about your boundaries. And when the work is, when it's starting to pile up and you're feeling it's too much, to have those conversations with your manager. Just like Casey said, it's got to be two ways. Maybe it was a Simon Sinek thing where he was speaking about something very similar. It's basically, you have the conversation with your manager, and when your schedule is too much, you ask them what needs to be reprioritized. Okay, if you need me to get this project done by Friday and it's Wednesday, this means that I need to push back on a couple of things. From your perspective, which are those tasks that I need to push back on? And then they're, as a mentor to their staff, they're supporting them with then better time management, going, okay, well, good point. You can't get this all done at the same time. Okay, let's rework this and rework the schedule.
And that's the thing. It's like if you're open to it and you're communicating, and as like a boss's point of view, like things aren't black and white, like everything's colored. So you've got to, like as a boss, you've got to come in with an open mind to it and be like, you know what? I could probably do all of that, but you're not me. So you've got to, like, you've got to realize that as a boss.
Yeah. It's the difference between a leader and a manager, right? Like, a leader understands, like, other people and how they work, and they're not going to work in the exact same way as you are. And I think this was the challenge with my old manager, that because she worked literally like 24/7, she could be at home putting her kids to bed, sending emails at, like, you know, 9 p.m. and all of those sorts of things. And she expected everybody to do the same. And it's like, well, there's people here who have young families who are wanting to give to their families and don't have the capacity to do it the same way.
That's the thing. It's like, that's all good for you to do that. Like, that's great. Mm-hmm. But you can't expect everyone to do that. And in a workplace, you need to have the difference.
I think as well, though, like, that's a choice. Like, I think if you are making a conscious choice that's the sort of work-life balance that you want, good for you. But you can't expect for then someone else to have those same goals and values.
Mm.
I think you've got to honor people's different choices.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you have to have a happy work environment and have a happy work. Like, your staff have to be happy. If they're happy, then usually the boss is happy. And a lot of bosses don't realize that you don't have a business without your team, and your team needs to be everything.
That is a huge issue in the corporate world. They do not recognize that the team, the people, are so important And I know, like, over the 23 years that I've been in corporate, it has been a challenge to actually see a company prioritize their people over the money that they make and the bottom line and all of that kind of stuff. So I love that you said that.
I've worked in corporate as well, and I've never once seen that they prioritize the people over the profit.
Yeah, as a boss and as a leader, like you need to treat your staff the way that you want to be treated.
Just quickly circling back to leadership, what would be your advice to women that are looking to step into leadership positions or potentially, you know, going down the entrepreneurial path or even pursuing their dreams and, you know, having to really tap into that confidence, that self-worth, and, you know, overcome some self-doubt?
I think it's definitely part of it is to work on your belief system. So coming back to your self-worth, your confidence, understanding what your past conditioning has been like, and learning all of that and really going inwards to rebuild your self-trust, rebuild the element of safety within, because that safety gives you the foundation to be able to move forward when it's those scary times, especially as an entrepreneur wanting to build your own business, because you will come up against so many roadblocks that are not necessarily external. It's all from the mind and, you know, our self-talk, and really work on that self-talk. And that's, again, you know, that's what I work with my clients around, to unlearn, pull out from the root cause of what's been holding them back. And that's, again, with the bringing them into the art aspect of fully learning to express themselves, is falling in love with who you are, all parts of you, even the parts of you that you've deemed unlovable. It's like, oh, okay, you know, an inner relationship, letting those parts be seen by that person. And that's scary. And it's like, oh, again, coming down to the rejection piece, like, they're going to reject me. But when you're with the right person, you're both discovering these parts about each other and learning to love yourself and those parts that you've deemed unlovable. That then gives you the space to also love the parts of your partner where they've deemed those parts unlovable. We get into the relationships that are a reflection of us and trigger those parts that we haven't dealt with. And so all of that's going to come up to the surface. And learning to love those parts of you that you've deemed unlovable are also those parts that you're going to need to bring into business as well. You know, the when you get nervous or, you know, getting things wrong where it's not perfect the first time around. You're like, oh, shit, okay. But you want to move through that as well. So foundation of your belief system and really doing the inner work and unlearning the old narratives to create more empowering ones is a huge part of it, because that's where you're going to actually take the risks.
So I guess for someone who might be listening and perhaps, you know, wondering, how can I love those parts of myself that I, you know, I can't even really look at, what would be some practices for them?
It starts with actually looking at those parts of you and sitting in those emotions of why, for example, you're not feeling good enough. And what is that? What is that? Where is that emotion in your body? And when you feel that emotion, it's personifying it. So, you know, where does that come from? Who does it feel like, or what does it feel like? And then bringing that to life and giving it an element of a character. And once you do that, when you really sit in the emotions of why you're not feeling worthy, and then the stories start come up, and then you sit in that and you go, okay, so what if those stories are true? And the deeper you go into that, it actually removes the charge. It's not actual truth. It's a story that I've been thinking from however long, and you don't necessarily need to know when it starts or when it started. It's just understanding that feeling there and going into it. And a really beautiful way to do this, I bring this to meditation, and, you know, there's various different forms of meditation. that you can do, but this is really beautiful where you just put on, you know, a playlist from Spotify that's titled Meditation that helps you to feel calm, and you sit in those emotions and you allow whatever comes up for you, whether it's like feeling the shame and wanting to cry and scream it out. You go into that, you allow yourself to scream it out, to cry it out. And then you can have a journal beside you. So if anything comes up that's triggered, like another thought or a realization of why you don't take risks or why you've held yourself back from launching your business, you can journal that out. It's really important to allow yourself to feel the unfelt emotions that we've pushed away and suppressed. And we push it away and suppress it because we think that we're not allowed to feel it and we need to be this perfect person, but no one is perfect. And I realized my perfectionism was attached to needing to look pretty. And it was based on societal standards. And so there were certain things that I wouldn't allow myself to do unless I was like completely and totally all dolled up. And I felt by my standards that I looked pretty enough. And so having to unravel that and having to unlearn that was the process of sitting in it of, okay, if I don't feel pretty, what's the story? What does that mean for me? And then it came down to my self-worth and connecting that I didn't feel good enough. And then it was like unraveling into the, oh shit, if I'm not pretty, I'm unlovable. And I was like, what the fuck? And realizing that that's just, it's not true. Like, that is not the truth. You came into this world, you know, you're a baby, that you never held yourself back from anything. You were just who you are. And I love it because, like, I think about the ocean. The ocean in her is feminine, right? Water. Like, when you're by the beach, she's not going to slow down her waves because she's concerned about what other people think. She's just being who she is. I had to learn to just be me in all aspects of the ugly, the pretty, the clumsy, the not so smart sometimes, saying like really ridiculous comments.
Did that take a while to unfold all of that and get to a place where you weren't attaching looking good to, you know, being lovable and worthy?
It unraveled over years of doing the inner work. But now knowing what those steps were for me, this is what I love about what I can bring to women, is that I can condense, say, 41 years of trying to discover all of this stuff into, you know, a few sessions and shorten that time frame because I've experienced it. I know where to go through and how to walk a woman through that process to uncover what it is for her. So it doesn't necessarily need to be that, you know, her perfectionism's attached to being pretty. It could be something completely different, but that time frame can be shortened into a couple of sessions.
Yeah. So do you say that it comes down to then giving yourself permission as well to fully accept yourself, embrace those parts of yourself that, you know, you love, you don't love, and just really just grant yourself the freedom to just show up, give yourself permission?
I think it's definitely giving yourself permission. A step before that is forgiveness. Really forgiving yourself for however anything else has turned out, the path that you've walked that hasn't been exactly what you wanted it to be. Forgiving yourself for those experiences of trauma that you've gone through. You know, like for me, my detachment from my self-worth was, I mean, it was due to a few issues, but part of it was sexual abuse when I was younger. In hindsight now, again, and this is through doing the work, is that that experience, whilst at the time I felt like I didn't have a voice, it also gave me a voice. So whenever I was in any other situation, I knew I could speak up. And then the foundation, unfortunately, through that experience was through anger. So I would I would always push through and just make sure I was heard, make sure I was seen, even if I didn't feel like I was. Through that experience, it gave me a voice, but I had to come into forgiveness for myself, of forgiving myself for not yelling out, forgiving myself for not telling my family at that time. So I held it back because I didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know how to say what had happened. But I made myself a promise that if my family member, like any of my family, if they had asked me if something had happened, I would say yes. And it was when I was 30 that it came out that this family, it happened to other girls within our circle of family friends. And so my sister called me up and asked me the question. And I was like, oh, fuck. Okay, this is the moment that I say yes and I say no and just like keep it. And I was like, no, I made myself a promise. And so I said yes. And that just catapulted like all of these different sort of emotions to realize, oh shit, I didn't feel like I was worthy of being loved. I didn't feel like I was worthy because of this experience. And I had to go through a process of forgiving myself. And then, you know, I worked with coaches as well to get really into the emotional depths of it. And whilst I was going through my qualifications for neurolinguistics programming, that's where it was like the root cause was just pulled out. And so using those modalities helped me to step into that space of forgiveness, helped me to go, okay, well, I can't change the past, but what I can do, I'm in control of who I am today and whether I want to give that situation power, which is what I was doing. And by giving that situation power, I was giving the abuser power. So I had to unlearn that and detach from that and realize, and this is also going to sound a little bit wild and crazy, I ended up also forgiving him. And then through forgiving him, yeah, it wasn't condoning what he had done, but it was detaching the attachment to that situation that allowed me to forgive myself, forgive him, and completely free myself from the situation. So then I could be who I am and just live my life and just come into the space of pure joy and love. And that was such a game changer, such a game changer. So it was the forgiveness that gave me the permission to just be who I am.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You've had a really beautiful journey, as hard and as much adversity as you've faced.
I think that's why I'm so passionate about what I do, is to remind women that they've got a voice to use it. Trust yourself, believe in yourself, you know, ask for what you desire in life, in all areas of your life, and use your voice.
Love it. Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we have kind of dived into so much today. Are you taking on clients at the moment? Will people be able to reach out to you via your socials or?
The best at the moment, I'm just working on my website. So the best would be via Instagram. So I'm pretty active on there. And with regards to, I've just opened the door for new one-on-one clients, so we can even work out a little podcast promotion for them as well.
Everyone listening, we will pop all the links down in the show notes, so you'll be able to connect with Dini. But again, thank you so much for sharing your story and for just being so open and honest and vulnerable, and you know, being a beacon of light for everyone.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited to see what you guys create from this and all the different stories. So thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you love Real Talk, please be sure to download, subscribe, and leave a 5-star rating and review. Also, make sure you follow us on TikTok and Instagram. Our handles can be found below in the show notes. If anything in today's episode resonated with you, or you would like to share your real talk, please reach out, slide into our DMs. We would love to connect. That's it for today. Please join us again next week for another juicy episode.